Hello and welcome to Asia Matters and, of course, Happy New Year. I'm Andrew People, bringing you another edition of the podcast that aims to look behind the headlines at the stories really driving the most exciting part of the world at the moment. It's been a busy start to the year in Asia with the signing of a first trade deal between the US and China. For more on that, please listen to our excellent podcast from before Christmas, where we spoke with Wall Street Journal reporter Lingling Wei and Trinh Nguyen from Natixis. But the big story this year is the recent elections in Taiwan, which saw President Tsai Ing-wen re-elected for another 4 years by a landslide. Ms. Tsai actually garnered 8.2 million votes, the highest number ever cast for one person in a Taiwanese presidential election. Her Democratic Progressive Party also retained its majority in Taiwan's parliament, the Legislative Yuan, although the majority narrowed somewhat. Ms. Tsai's convincing victory represents a remarkable change in fortunes for her personally. Her popularity had sunk pretty low by 2018, thanks to her perceived mismanagement of the economy and relations with China. But the size of her win now poses big questions for the government in Beijing too, particularly around whether its current strategy towards Taiwan is ever going to help China achieve its quest to bring the island back under its control. Here to discuss these questions and more, I'm joined today by George Yin of Swarthmore College in Philadelphia, who's recently been involved in a large-scale survey encompassing Taiwanese identity and attitudes and cross-strait relations. George, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about the elections.
Right, thank you.
George, let's dive into the results themselves. How do you explain the big turnaround in Tsai Ing-wen's fortunes over the last year? Many are pointing to the unrest in Hong Kong as a big factor, which turns sentiment in Taiwan against the Kuomintang party, which is perceived to be closer to Beijing. Was that the decisive factor for you?
I think that's quite an important factor. But I think that particular factor of Hong Kong actually interacts with the blue KMT party's own electoral strategy and also Han Kuo-yu's personal characteristic.
Mm. So he was the leader of the he was the candidate for the KMT.
Right. So he's known for being quite pro-China.
Yeah.
And in addition to being pro-China, he's often has quite ambiguous when it comes to specifying how he's going to help preserve Taiwan's sovereignty and autonomy. So basically, the Hong Kong protests, I think, created a series of events that made the electorate think a lot more about Han's own ambiguity when it comes to cross-strait relations and this pro-China label that we often times would put on Han. So importantly, sometimes in Taiwanese presidential elections, you could actually do quite well, even when you don't adopt a very clear, cross-strait relations, platform. So for instance, President Tsai, when she was elected in 2016, her nickname is Hollow Tsai, Kong Xing Tsai, Water Spinach. And she got this nickname because, people criticized her for being not specific enough about cross relations, but nonetheless, still got elected.
Yeah, but in this campaign, she's been quite explicitly more hostile towards Beijing. Is that fair comment, do you think, particularly around what she's been saying about what's been going on in Hong Kong?
Right. I wouldn't say that she's hostile. I would say that she is more resistant, towards various claims and policies that Beijing initiated in the past 2 years to change the Taiwan Straits, status quo. But that being said, I think Tsai is also balancing her electoral concern with her concern to maintain cross-strait stability and not to antagonize China unnecessarily. So to give an example, a lot of people have been lobbying Tsai to maybe push for a new law or new policies that will make it easier for the Hong Kong protesters to potentially emigrate to Taiwan. Right. So Tsai has been resisting that.
Yeah.
And the reason why she resisted that is, of course, she provided a lot of moral support and, everyone, in the DPP is very sympathetic. But that being said, Tsai didn't want, and the DPP, they didn't want to antagonize China unnecessarily. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that just yesterday, one of Tsai's main advisors and a very important former DPP chairman, Xu Xinliang, He just gave an interview to Zhongpingshe, so one of the major Chinese news media outlets that specializes in covering cross-strait relations. So in that particular interview, Xu Xinliang mentioned how the biggest achievement of the Tsai Ing-wen administration in the past 4 years is to hollow out the Taiwan independence movement. So by that, Xu, who, by the way, is famously much more, you know, pro-China or moderate, you know, within the DPP. So Xi's point is that Tsai, by adopting a very moderate stance that balances Taiwan's desire for sovereignty and autonomy and the desire not to antagonize China, has really changed and marginalized the political space of more extremist pro-independence politicians in Taiwan. So just one last point on this. So if you look at the percentage vote of the party list, so the extreme anti-China pro-independence parties generally didn't do, you know, so well. So for instance, President Chen, Taiwan's first DPP president and known for being quite confrontational, you know, towards China, the party that he supported only got, I believe, about 1% of the parliamentary election party list, you know, votes. And President Chen now said that he will leave politics because his party did so badly.
That's fascinating. So President Tsai really has pulled off quite a skillful balancing act here so far.
Right.
I mean, to what extent do you think this result, though, shows that Taiwanese people are kind of rejecting any move towards the sort of system you have in Hong Kong, which is known as one country, two systems, this idea that Hong Kong is part of China, but it has its own legal systems and so on. It has a measure of independence from the mainland. That's sometimes been seen as a potential future model for Taiwan.
Right.
But to what extent do you think voters in Taiwan, with this election, have basically said, no, we don't want that?
So I think their support of Tsai Ing-wen is a resounding no, you know, to Beijing. In that sense, I would compare Taiwan's newest presidential election results with the recent Hong Kong electoral results, where the pro-China political parties were decimated. But that being said, I also want to emphasize that the Taiwanese voters are also quite, I think, actually quite intelligent, in the sense that on the one hand, they reject one country, two system. But on the other hand, I don't think the Taiwanese voters really would support a policy that would confront China unnecessarily. So again, like, I think in order to see this, we need to go back to the party list. So essentially, Taiwan has a system similar to Germany's electoral system when it comes to parliamentary election. So we have regional elections in which parliamentary members would get elected in very different electoral districts. But there is also a party list, where the main political parties would ask voters for support, and they would have a list of legislators that they want to have in the parliament. So if we look at those votes, it's important to remember that the DPP didn't actually do so well. The DPP, I believe, got about 33 to 34%, which is only 1% more than the KMT. That's quite a stark contrast compared to President Tsai's overwhelming victory.
Yes.
And that's quite significant, in the sense that it's a clear indication that although the electorate in Taiwan in this election doesn't want one country, two system, but at the same time, they also want to make sure that Taiwan would pursue a responsible, moderate cross-strait relations policy.
Yeah, that's fascinating. She actually massively outperformed her broader party in that sense. I should point out, I think the elections in Hong Kong were more local in nature rather than parliamentary elections there.
Right.
George, can I ask about your broader research then? Bottom line here, what does your research show about attitudes towards the mainland in Taiwan? How does the country actually split on some kind of eventual reunification with the mainland versus staying as they are now or becoming truly independent? What is your research showing? How are attitudes changing over the years in Taiwan?
So I guess to give a bit of a background on the research project, in November, as part of a team of scholars from Harvard and Taiwan's National Zhenzhi University, we ran a public opinion poll in Taiwan, asking the respondents various questions, cross-strait relations, and how they think about Taiwanese and Chinese identity. So to answer your question, I think the Taiwanese voters are actually quite, I think their view towards China, for the lack of a better word, is probably best characterized by complex.
Yeah.
On the one hand, they are very wary of China. When you look at the public opinion poll, for instance, a majority of the Taiwanese respondents in our survey really worry about Taiwanese sovereignty, and they would prioritize sovereignty over economic exchange and prosperity when it comes to cross-strait relations. But that being said, when we look at data on whether you support a one country, two system, you see broadly, similar trends, which is no support, or do you feel like you are more Taiwanese or, more Chinese? Generally, people are more likely to believe that they are more Taiwanese. But that being said, another part of the survey also shows that when it comes to the public's assessment of the power and influence of China, a majority of them believe that China right now is much more influential than the US in the Asia Pacific. So here, the issue is that on the one hand, the Taiwanese people are very wary of China, but on the other hand, they also believe that China is very important and that Taiwan could not engage with China in the future in order to maintain the island's prosperity and security. And the key question is, how is Taiwan going to engage with China? And comparing our results to earlier results, so that's actually a very tricky question, given
yes.
that surveys tend to ask very different questions. One thing that's very surprising about our results is that even given the Hong Kong protests, there are still a lot of Taiwanese voters who believe that engagement with China is quite important. That's actually quite surprising to us.
Yes.
Given the Hong Kong protests, there are still 40% of the Taiwanese public who believes that it's essential to engage with China when it comes to economic affairs. We were expecting that percentage to be much lower.
Yeah, interesting. Are you finding, are there generational differences here? For example, do people say in their 20s, early 30s, do they think differently about cross-strait relations to the older generations, or is it more, again, a more complex picture? How does it break down generationally here?
So I think here the picture is actually, for once, not too complex. I think generally the younger respondents are much more wary of China, while the older generation places a lot more weight in terms of engaging, with China. And that, I think, is driven by two factors. So the first factor is that the older generation, after all, they grew up under the KMT. In the 70s and the 80s, when you were in school and studying history, you don't study Taiwanese history, you study Chinese history. And the teachers had never been to China because of the political situation, most likely. And the students, obviously, at the time, also couldn't go to China, but they would read essays about how beautiful, Chinese rivers and Chinese mountains are, so on and so forth. So I think that did generate a more pro-China sentiment. And importantly, this particular way of educating people and trying to promote a sense of Chinese nationalism. So that particular educational system basically stopped after Taiwan democratized.
As you say, right. you do find a sort of generational gap when it comes to cross-strait relations. To right. what extent do you see that as a static thing, in the sense that often we find young people tend to start out with a certain set of views? So the cliche would be that most young people tend to start out with quite left-wing, liberal views in life, and as they get older and they start paying taxes and the rest of it, they become more right-wing in their attitudes. If you sort of bring that to Taiwan and the sort of findings that you have about Taiwanese attitudes, to what extent do you think that the younger generation, who may have a sort of cooler attitude towards the mainland right now, to what extent do you think that would change as they get older, and to what extent would you expect that to sort of remain the same?
I think the left, center, right, distinction is a bit different compared pro-China, pro-Taiwan, distinction, right? So I think the left-center-right distinction or, you know, preferences are often has driven, you know, as you, you know, have hinted at, by economic interest, right? But I think when it comes to China and, you know, stance towards Taiwanese independence or unification, you know, or, you know, identification with Taiwan versus China, I think that's a very different issue.
Yeah.
So I think those issues, from what I know of the research on, you know, political attitudes formation, those attitudes tend to form quite early on in someone's lives. And people tend to stick to those attitudes. So, for instance, people rarely vote for a political party that his or her family doesn't also vote for.
Right.
I suspect in the Taiwan case, when it comes to attitudes towards China, towards unification and independence, that is probably the most important thing that we need to think about. Although that being said, I think here economic interest does factor into, you know, how the Taiwanese public thinks about cross-strait relations, right? So I suspect there could be maybe a little bit of moderating effect as people grow older and maybe, you know, start having businesses, in China or and various, you know, economic entanglements, right? But I think fundamentally, you know, the attitude should remain quite consistent. And I think this is could pose a real problem for China.
Mm.
When right now, if I remember correctly, I think this time voters under the age of 30, I think 90% voted for President Tsai.
Right. Fascinating. And then you touched on it there a bit. How do economic factors play in here? I mean, I guess looking from the outside, you would think that the risk for Taiwan in having a sort of cooler stance towards the mainland is economic.
Right.
I mean, after all, something like a third of Taiwan's exports go to China.
Right.
We've already seen over the last year or so, I think, that the number of tourists from the mainland to Taiwan has come down. And that's potentially a big hit to the economy.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, Taiwan's economy has been pretty resilient in the last couple of years in terms of the headline figures. How are economic factors playing in here? To what extent do people feel it's sort of risky economically to be more hostile towards China? Or to what extent do they actually think that Taiwan, can survive even if ties with the mainland, you know, drift apart somewhat?
A few things here in the context of this election. So I think potentially the KMT could have made a pretty strong case saying that Taiwan should improve relationship with China, you know, in order to safeguard the island's, you know, economic prosperity.
Hmm.
But it failed to do so in this election. So the first reason is that Han Kuo-yu, the KMT presidential candidate, so he is not known as a politician who is very good with policy. So policy formulation or, you know, ability to, you know, grasp the nuances of important policies, including economic policies, right? Instead, he's much better at inventing very interesting, concise slogans. So in that sense, he's quite Trump-like. So the difference between the voters in Taiwan and the voters in the U.S. is that the voters in Taiwan are actually quite aware of policy issues, because Taiwan is a small island, highly dependent on, you know, international trade, right? So the voters basically know that they couldn't make a mistake when it comes to electing a president or even a parliamentary member. So they do actually put a lot of weight on how one is able to grasp important policies, especially economic policies, right? And Han Kuo-yu just doesn't strike the voters as someone who has that ability. So that's the first thing that explains why the KMT couldn't make a case that Taiwan should improve political relations with China in order to...
There was a weakness in the candidate himself.
Yes.
That
yes,
sort of,
exactly.
He didn't quite sort of have the economic credibility that you need if you're trying to make an economic argument.
Right, exactly. And also second, the party itself also has some issues. So the KMT, so not everyone, there are a lot of good politicians in the KMT, I believe. But at the same time, there are also some politicians who have extensive economic interest in China. And the voters also know that.
Right.
So that also made the KMT just seems untrustworthy when it comes to promoting a platform of political engagement with China in order to safeguard, you know, Taiwan's prosperity. Because for the voters, their question is, are we, you know, trying to you know, improve relationship with China in order to safeguard Taiwan's prosperity or the prosperity of your own family. So anyway, so that's the blue KMT part of the story. And on the other hand, another part of the story is the DPP part of the story. So I think the DPP in this, when it comes to the economy, it did, you know, I think two things, you know, actually three things that I think are important here. So the first thing is that the KMT has been pushing an increase in the minimum wage in Taiwan. And I think the minimum wage has increased by twice or three times, you know, in the past year and a half. So that is something that I think really makes the, especially the younger generation feel that, okay, so no matter what, at least, you know, we are, you know, doing better, right?
Yeah.
So, so I think that's the first thing that DPP did correctly. And the second thing is, you know, when it comes to tourism, so I think the DPP, and especially, you know, President Chai, I think she was very wise in terms of her pushing for the new southbound policy. So basically, the new southbound policy is Taiwan's new grand strategy to engage further with the Southeast
Asia. Asia, yes.
Yeah. And part of that strategy is tied to trying to increase the number of Southeast Asian tourists, you know, to Taiwan. So I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but from what I remember, it's actually quite a successful campaign. Of course, they don't totally offset, you know, the revenues from Chinese tourists, but nonetheless, they do help.
Hmm.
And also the Southeast Asian countries, they are also, you know, growing, becoming richer. So this is a strategy that is only going to work better in the future. So less tourism. And also third, I think we also need to remember that Taiwan's economy, you know, right now actually is benefiting from U.S.-China decoupling and
right.
will further benefit from further decoupling in the future, you know, too, as U.S.-China tension, you know, rises. So, for instance, right now, I think a lot of the orders, you know, in the past, they will be for Chinese firms, whether they are tech firms or, you know, machinery firms. Anyway, those orders are now going to Taiwan, given the risk of the U.S.-China trade war.
Yeah.
So Taiwanese economy is actually benefiting quite a bit from this particular, you know, development. Furthermore, and I think President Chai is, and her administration is quite good at exploiting this opportunity for Taiwan. And
yes.
Again, I don't have the details of the policies, but I think the administration has been pushing for facilitating, for instance, Taiwanese you know, capital to move back to Taiwan from China in order to take advantage of this new level of economic you know, activities between Taiwan and the U.S. given the trade war.
Yeah.
So a long set of answers, but the general point here is that I think the Blue Party failed to make a case that Taiwan needs China right. in order to prosper, you know, economically,
yeah.
while President Tsai and the Green Party showed that you can actually, you know, keep a distance from China while still maintaining Taiwan's economic vitality.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. Clearly, the trade war actually proved to be a somewhat favorable headwind for the DPP and Tsai
right.
Ing-wen. Can I ask then, moving on from that,
right.
what has your research shown and what do you sense about attitudes in Taiwan towards the US itself now and relations
right.
there? We had that sort of very strange incident almost during the transition of the Trump administration where
right.
he became the first incoming US president for many years to actually
right.
seemingly recognize Taiwan and Taiwan's president.
What's right.
actually been the reality of the Trump administration and how do people in Taiwan kind of view the US at the moment?
I think people in Taiwan I guess two things. So on the one hand, I think people in Taiwan are very wary of China's influence. As I mentioned earlier, a majority of them, 60%, believes that China is more influential than the U.S. Right now in the Asia-Pacific you know, region. But on the other hand, a lot of them are also still see the U.S. as Taiwan's most important allies when it comes to both you know, national security issues, but also economic you know, issues. And furthermore, so although Trump has a reputation for being quite mercurial, right now, given our survey, the Taiwanese public actually thinks that Trump actually believes that the U.S. is quite a credible, reliable ally, you know, for Taiwan. So, for instance, we have a question asking the respondents whether they think the U.S. was sending troops
yeah.
to help Taiwan if Taiwan declares, independence. So I think more than, from my memory, I think more than 50% of the respondents believe that that would be the case.
What do you think the answer would be if you posed that question in the US?
To be honest, I think it depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
I think if you ask people in the U.S. whether the U.S. should and will send in troops to defend Taiwan, if Taiwan, declares formal independence, I think most people would say no, the U.S. will not send in troops.
Right.
In that sense, I think the Taiwanese public is almost delusional.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you ask the Americans if they would send in troops, if China, invades Taiwan without Taiwan, doing anything provocative, I think a lot of people, especially among the political elites, would say like, yes, the U.S. needs to intervene. And there are multiple reasons why the U.S. Would intervene, I think.
I mean, last question on that. Do you think ultimately that this election and the result says anything about the likelihood of some kind of broader conflagration around Taiwan? Do you think it makes it more or less likely, or is it something where there's a kind of understood balance of power here that neither the US nor China ultimately is prepared to interrupt?
Right. So I know I'm in the minority on this, but I think there is actually some signs like cross-strait relations will improve, after this election.
Interesting.
So let's first talk about why that would be the case in Taiwan. So people in China like to equate President Tsai, with extremist pro-independence politicians. And the reason behind that is because President Tsai was behind President Li Donghui's drafting of a statement saying that the relationship between Taiwan and China is a special state-to-state relationship, which really provoked China back in 1999. But that being said, President Tsai herself is actually quite moderate.
Yeah.
And in addition, she doesn't have the best relationship with the more pro-independent, more deep green, extremist, politicians. But nonetheless, in her first term, she did have to engage with those politicians in order to get their help for her re-election, right? But now President Tsai has been re-elected and she can run again. In Taiwan, you can only be the president for two terms. So right now, President Tsai actually could do what she wants when it comes to cross-strait relations without the constraints from the more, pro-independence, politicians. So yeah, so to summarize, in the case of the Taiwan, story, President Tsai right now actually is much freer in terms of pursuing a conciliatory policy towards, China. And to add a little bit of interest, meat to the argument, I think one thing that's very interesting right now that we should observe is how Taiwan is dealing with the Wang Liqiang case, the Chinese spy who got caught
right.
in Australia, right? So curiously, after the President Tsai's re-election, I think generally the Taiwanese state and media have actually been downplaying this whole case. So there's much less media coverage, and people are not really talking about it. People from the from the government are not really talking about it. And I think that's a signal that the Taiwanese state wants to send to China, indicating that it doesn't want to unnecessarily It doesn't want cross-strait relations to, deteriorate, unnecessarily despite this incident, right?
Yeah.
And very lastly on President Tsai, so she also gave a speech recently talking about how it's important for Taiwan and China to have a dialogue based on the principles of democracy, equality, and sovereignty. So I think the important phrase here is a dialogue, 对话. In Chinese. Anyway, so yeah, so I think, there are actually some incentive for the Taiwanese side to reach out, to China. On the other hand, for the Chinese side, I think two things are going on here. So I think ultimately the Chinese leaders are quite pragmatic.
Yeah.
Because the only way to rise to the top of the Chinese system is to be a very good realist, to think about things in terms of power and interest. And I think there are also a lot of very intelligent people, in Beijing. I think by now people should have realized that their, the old approach towards Taiwan is not working and they need a new approach.
Mm.
So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that I think right now there is also more incentive for China to engage Taiwan. So in order to understand that, we have to go back to the U.S.-China trade war and tech war.
So one reason why Taiwan is very valuable, I think, in the Sino-US economic conflict is that Taiwan is an important component of the global production chain when it comes to the high-tech sector, right? So Taiwan not only produces a lot of the key components for computers and various consumer electronics, but it also has a lot of patents and expertise, right? So for instance, when it comes to semiconductor. So I think both the US and China would really want Taiwan to be part of their camp, in the tech war, in the context of US-China decoupling. So putting everything together, I think in China, so on the one hand, maybe I'm too optimistic, but I think Beijing could actually become more pragmatic when it comes to dealing with DPP. And so first, and second, I think Beijing also has the incentive to be more pragmatic, in the context of the US-China economic conflict.
There's enough recognition on both sides of the huge risks and costs that allowing this situation to deteriorate. George, thank you so much for your time today and for talking us through this and really giving us a broader perspective to the election result, which hit the headlines recently. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you also to my colleagues Vincent Nee and Rebecca Bailey, and of course to Alexander Lestrange, who composed the music for us. Stay tuned to Asia Matters. Lots of exciting things coming up. Lots of really interesting podcasts in the works. China's economy, Indian politics, plenty of other matters. Do get in touch with us at asiamatterspod@gmail.com as well if you've got suggestions or feedback. And once again, thank you for listening.